Welcome to Agency in Focus, Department of Homeland Security, sponsored by Leidos. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
Because of the never-ending stream of cybersecurity incidents, the Homeland Security Department's cybersecurity mission seems more important than ever. That mission includes helping ensure the safety and resiliency of the nation's critical infrastructure. For an update, we turn to Jeanette Manfro. She's Assistant DHS Secretary of the Office of Cybersecurity and Communications. That's part of the National Protection and Programs Directorate. Ms. Manfro, good to have you on.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So tell us, first of all, you've got a lot of nested titles there, like so many people do in the federal government. What do you actually do?
Sure. I am now the Assistant Secretary for Cybersecurity and Communications at DHS, and that means I run our organization of roughly 1,000 individuals who are focused on securing federal networks, assisting the private sector with identifying and responding to threats to our critical infrastructure, as well as kind of working more broadly, globally, on trying to improve the security of the overall cyber ecosystem.
Yeah, that's a pretty wide mission area. And I want to talk about the critical infrastructure for a moment, because that hasn't been in the news as much lately. Mm-hmm. And this includes all of the apparatus set up a number of years ago, and correct me if I'm wrong, to share information with different sectors, electrical and utilities and different parts, energy, with the federal government, correct?
Absolutely.
How is that going? I mean, how much information sharing is actually going on? Because I think that took a little bit of time to ramp up when it was first conceived.
It did. And there's sort of different types of information sharing. And as you mentioned, much of this critical infrastructure concept and the associated kind of mechanisms that are a part of it, it was actually stood up when the department was stood up. And it was primarily focused on threats like terrorism. And so a physical-focused threat model, although it also encompasses things like hurricanes, et cetera. And while cyber was in the mind of the founders of both the authorities that were granted via Congress to protect all of that information, but also the infrastructure that was set up to engage with industry, it wasn't as much of a priority. And so the benefit for us is that those authorities, though, work for cyber information sharing as well, although we've been granted some additional ones. And what we've looked at is, while we have this unique space at DHS, where we have the authorities to protect information from both a privacy perspective, but also to protect information that industry would share with us for example, we can't share it with regulators for the purposes of enforcement, or it's not subject to FOIA. And that creates a space where we can have conversations that are important for us to have. And so over the years, we've looked to modernize. How do we modernize this information sharing in order to get us to increased automated information sharing? And Congress passed important legislation in 2015 that provided some additional protections, liability protections in particular, for entities that would share cyber threat information with the department. And so that one program in automated indicator sharing it's going well. We have over 200 entities. That could be an individual company, or it could be an information sharing analysis organization that represents many companies that are signed up to receive. We're averaging about 45,000 different indicators that are being shared with every month with our federal and non-federal partners through this automated program. What we'd like to see more of is continuing to push on how do we provide additional context, and what I mean in this case is technical context, that where companies can build sort of their receiving systems so that they're actually automating the actions that they're taking.
But it sounds like you have been able to achieve a greater level of trust with the sharing entities than maybe when you first started out.
I think we have. Part of it is proving that we've got value. And we've really done a lot of work to understand what is it that's valuable to industry and to our federal partners. What do they need from us from a network defense? And it's is it probably not just an IP address, probably need some context around, well, why is this important? And so we've been working really hard to understand what makes it valuable, what does timeliness mean, how do we differentiate the different programs to the different customer sets? And we have a ways to go, but I think where we are right now is we can have conversations where we can have an honest exchange of views about what's working, what's not working, and how can we make it better, and importantly, how can we do that together? Because the one thing that's really just so heartening for me, at least, to see is that when it comes down to it, whether it's our federal partners or our industry partners, everybody's got the same goal.
We're speaking with Jeanette Manfra. She's Assistant DHS Secretary for the Office of Cybersecurity and Communications, and this whole sharing regime involves, I think, 16 or 17 industrial sectors that have critical infrastructure. Their federal counterpart, in all cases, is not DHS. For example, mm-hmm. It could be the Energy Department or the Transportation Department or Treasury. I guess DHS has the bulk of them. Is the mechanism that you use for DHS sharing, is that the same set of technologies that are used by the non-DHS counterparts to those critical infrastructure operators?
It is. Yeah, so the mechanism that we have set up with the what's now 16 critical infrastructure sectors, where you have a federal agency who serves as a sector-specific agency, the concept is that, well, DHS does serve as a sector-specific agency for many sectors. There are others, as you mentioned, energy, health and human services, treasury, where they have, you know, these sector-specific agencies have developed deep knowledge of that industry and how it works and what the business looks like and what those interdependencies are. And they've developed trusted relationships with those entities. And where my organization is trying to look at is a cross-sector. So take an electric entity. If you have an electric entity who has broad responsibilities for a region, for ensuring the ability to be resilient against cyber attacks in their region, you know, they're focused in their level, and increasingly they're focused across industry. But then you have the Department of Energy, who has developed deep insight into how the electric grid works and what can be done to improve that and where the risks might be. And then DHS can work with energy, and we do regularly, to share information back and forth. And they can tell us, here's what we're seeing on the electric sector. And we can look and say, okay, well, here's what that might introduce at a cross-sector risk or a national risk. Or alternatively, here's what we're seeing in intelligence or a cross-sector risk that we can pass to energy, and they can take a deep dive into the electric sector.
Because I would think the integrative function of all of these sectors is where some of the big value really lies.
Absolutely. And particularly for cyber, where you're talking about, you know, geography doesn't quite matter as much anymore. And you need to have both the entity, you know, in this example, say the electric company, but you also need to have a broader community of internet service providers, security providers, technology providers that are also seeing things where they have networks and customers. And so sort of bringing that entire community together, we've been talking about critical services and functions, not necessarily just about that one asset, but about an entire chain of entities that are working together to deliver a service or function, and how does that chain work, and how does DHS integrate all of that working with, you know, in this case, the Department of Energy.
Now, from a operational standpoint, have there been some horrible incidents averted that maybe the public doesn't know about, and maybe you can tell us, or maybe you can't tell them what they were specifically, but have things not happened as a result of this information sharing and, in some cases, response mechanisms you've set up?
We do believe that we have disrupted some potential significant events. Now, it is always hard to prove a negative, if you will. But what we have done and what we'll be increasingly able to do as DHS sits in the center of increasingly a lot of data about what's happening on networks and what's happening on devices. What we've been able to identify is that, and we have more sensors in place on federal networks, so we have more insight there, but where you're seeing that either something that somebody was willing to share because something happened to them, or even they stopped something through whatever defensive mechanisms they've got, they share that back with DHS. And we're able to push that out. And another entity will say, hey, I wasn't actually aware that I needed to be defending against that, but I took that piece of information, I looked, and I was able to secure my defenses before that particular, you know, set of infrastructure was able to use to impact me.
Jeanette Manfraud is Assistant DHS Secretary for the Office of Cybersecurity and Communications. In part two of this interview, Manfraud discusses updates to how DHS goes about protecting federal networks. I'm Tom Temin.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.
Homeland Security's Trusted Internet Connection program, known as TIC, is quietly undergoing an overhaul. TIC 3.0 will cut manual reporting, trim expensive requirements, add more risk management, and optimize TIC for the cloud, something users at many agencies have been asking for. This is all according to Jeanette Manfra, Assistant DHS Secretary for the Office of Cybersecurity and Communications.
We have been working on TIC modernization for actually a fair amount of time, but what we did as a part of the President's recent cyber executive order and the IT modernization efforts that's being run out of the American Technology Council is we've really see this as a great opportunity to take the initiative that the government is undergoing to modernize our IT, but to also look at it as an opportunity to modernize how we think about security. And the the Trusted Internet Connection program, very important program, developed several years ago to get a handle on how the government is connecting to the internet, and it enabled us to deploy sensors at these aggregation points, which has actually been very useful in understanding what people might be trying to do from the adversary perspective. So we did recently modify the existing TIC reference architecture, which was to focus on removing some costly requirements like SCIF, secure communications type requirements. We're also planning for what we call TIC 3.0, that we want to focus on addressing some common agency challenges such as manual reporting. We believe we can use the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program to automate the reporting. We're also looking at tying the TIC capabilities to the NIST Cybersecurity Risk Management Framework so we can improve our decision-making based off of risk. And then we want to address cloud visibility with that TIC 3.0. It's I'm not going to, simplify it. It is complicated. Adoption of the cloud improves a lot of efficiencies, both from a cost and a usability perspective. But it also introduces some challenges in terms of how do we both as a government benefit from this, the opportunities that cloud computing provides us, but also how do we ensure that we're maintaining enough visibility into important traffic so we can continue to make those risk-based decisions and continue to understand who's targeting our network, how can we disrupt that?
I've heard a lot of agencies say that the cloud providers they're using are adding really nifty software services mm-hmm. as value-added services at a rate so fast that those services are outstripping the speed of FedRAMP to make sure that they stay certified. And that must be a concern, too.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that as well. And we are working with the FedRAMP program. We're a key part of that with working with GSA on that. We are, the way we're approaching TIC 3.0 is let's not retrofit the legacy TIC into the cloud. Let's create a TIC 3.0 that allows us to, embrace the way that, both existing but also emerging technologies that maintains this visibility, but allows us to keep pace. So we're not. I'm not going to say scrap the whole thing, because there's a lot of really useful things that both FedRAMP and TIC provide. But it's how do we sort of embrace as a government for the long term in a sustainable way this ability to quickly add new and emerging technologies while fitting into, of course, what is a bit of a bureaucratic process inside the government, and ensuring that visibility. So we're working with a few agencies. We're going to do some pilots, some TIC pilots focused on TIC in the cloud, if you will, throughout 2018, and we're really encouraging agencies to submit proposals to OMB in order to be included. But we think that there's it's not about let's just make what we've got in the TIC environment and create an equivalent version in the cloud. Let's really rethink the concepts of what we're trying to achieve with TIC, and how do we migrate those concepts into a new environment, if that makes sense.
Jeanette Manfra is Assistant DHS Secretary for the Office of Cybersecurity and Communications. I'm Tom Temin.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.
We're speaking with Jeanette Manfra. She's Assistant DHS Secretary for the Office of Cybersecurity and Communications. And as you upgrade and update all of these capabilities, what's the future of Einstein? Is he part of this also?
He is always part of it. So Einstein, referring to the sensors, perimeter-based sensors that are in both the first two phases, Einstein 1 and Einstein 2, are deployed at the TICs or MTIPs, depending on which agency you are. So that's sort of what I was referring to is those sensors which focus on net flow and intrusion detection have provided a tremendous value to us, and we really believe that there's tremendous value still. Even with understanding net flow data, companies are doing really interesting things. We've run a couple of pilots, and we think that there's a lot of opportunity moving beyond signatures, trying to get into anomaly-based detection. And so the sort of movement of where we want to go with TIC, and not every agency is going to move into a new sort of cloud environment for all of their capabilities, so we have to be addressing both. But we're trying to think of, with our national cyber protection system, which includes the Einstein sensors, what's next? Where do we want to take? How do we capture the best of industry, particularly around anomaly-based detection? And we have a successful pilot now that we're moving into production with certain agencies that we think is really going to change the game for us in terms of leveraging data, leveraging all the big data analytics, and how we think about getting ahead of the adversary.
Now, the GSA is sometime in the next year, maybe next year or two, going to release a giant government-wide acquisition contract for telecommunications networking services. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of agencies might be switching carriers, switching providers, switching network topologies. Do you watch that kind of thing to make sure that they can stay compliant or stay cyber safe with
all
new technology?
Right. Not only are we watching it, we've been very closely involved with GSA in the development of this. I think this contract provides a tremendous opportunity to address a lot of the lessons learned that we, over the past several years, in the deployment of Einstein and the deployment of our continuous diagnostic mitigation, that we're working with GSA to build into that, so that it's not just about network services, it's also about the security piece of that, and how do we do that through kind of leveraging the purchasing power of the entire government through a contract like that is very critical for us.
And looking at the big picture, what do you see as agencies' biggest cyber challenges in the year ahead?
A lot of it comes down to resources. It's a challenging resource environment for companies and government, whether that's federal, state, and local. And when we engage with agencies, we've really spent a lot of the last several years developing a deep understanding of what each agency looks like, how they think about securing their data and their networks and their devices. And so we've learned from that, and particularly with the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program, is how can we address those challenges that make maybe sense to centralize more so that, we're, again, leveraging that significant purchasing power when we're consolidating all of our resources, DHS deploying those capabilities, so that, so they're not all on their own. But also, how do we assist them in terms of prioritizing, helping them understand both the risk that they see, and that's sort of a mutual, they help us understand, and we try to provide them feedback, and helping them prioritize with limited resources. These are the areas based off of a mutual understanding of both their risk, but also broad enterprise risk that we'd like to see you invest in. So I think that's always the biggest challenge, and that's where you see a lot of our binding operational directives focused on, is helping with that prioritization of resources, elevating the importance of a chief information security officer within an organization. They have to be a part of that risk management discussion within an agency head, just like an industry is working to do as well. So I would say those are their biggest challenges.
And are you confident that every last shred of Kaspersky will eventually be pulled out of federal systems?
I am confident that, yes, every agency that has identified it on their network has communicated with us, and they have a plan to do a safe replacement.
And have you got the new secretary, Ms. Nielsen, up to speed yet on all of this?
She has actually been up to speed in her previous roles. As soon as she starts, we'll catch her up on all the details, but she's well aware of this topic.
Jeanette Manfra is Assistant DHS Secretary for the Office of Cybersecurity and Communications. There's much more to the interview. We'll post it in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency in Focus, Department of Homeland Security, sponsored by Leidos, on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search DHS15.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.